State Representative Bob Morris takes on the Girl Scouts. Is he off base? The effort to eliminate specialty license plates, what's behind it? New pressure on the governor to seek the White House. Dick Lugar fights back in the sentencing of Charlie White. That plus the return of the Indiana gridiron and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 24,
2012. Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, State Representative Bob Morris made national headlines. The Fort Wayne lawmaker is the only member of the Indiana House of Representatives who didn't support a resolution honoring the Girl Scouts. Then he sent an email to 18 fellow Republicans calling the Girl Scouts a radicalized organization that supports abortion. After avoiding reporters for most of the next afternoon, Morris came out of a private caucus to answer questions, but after just a couple of inquiries, started walking away, saying he wants to focus on other issues. He did say that he took his children out of the Girl Scouts this week, and when he returned to answer more questions, made no effort to back down from his comments.
This letter was intended for my colleagues, and it's something that my family and I feel deeply about in our decision.
Can you tell us what leads you to believe that the Girl Scouts support abortion?
I suggest that your viewers get on the internet and do some research, contact Girl Scouts of America on a national level, and ask them that question. They're not against it.
You know, there are a lot of sideshows at the General Assembly, really in all walks of life, and you just have to determine which ones you're going to go into.
Is Bob Morris wrong? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, do the Girl Scouts have ties to Planned Parenthood?
I mean, this is, it is so wrong. I mean, his statements are so wrong. They're destructive. And what's interesting about this, it seems to me, is he didn't apologize, okay? He believes this.
He issued a statement that he said was an apology to anyone he offended, but then he reiterated most of what he said.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't back down at all. He believes this nonsense, and he's in the General Assembly. And the irony of this is not only is it is incorrect, and not only is it untrue, and not only is it harmful, but you know what? It's not that far off the spectrum for the Tea Party people. And the Tea Party people are controlling the Republican Party. So the fact that you have the attack on the Girl Scouts at the same time you're talking, we're actually having a debate about whether contraception should be available to women in the year 2012, there is no issue too far to the right for this group. And this is a pretty good indication of it.
And any good Tea Party needs cookies, right? Speaking of cookies, House Speaker Brian Bosma, you saw in the opening soundbite there, when he was asked about this, he brought out cookies and he ate cookies during the interview and he passed out cookies on the floor. Clearly, he's not backing up Bob Morris. Has the party left him?
No, I don't think. First of all, I thought Brian Bosma handled it fine. I think he put this in proper perspective when he says, look, people have a right to their opinion, and he doesn't agree with this opinion. And I don't think most of the people in the Republican Party agree with that opinion. And so I thought he handled it. I thought Brian Bosma handled it the way he should handle it. I think it's unfortunate that Representative Morris handled this the way he did. He apologized for the tone of his remarks, but I didn't hear the actual apology for what he said and the way he went about going or way he went about doing it. So, you know, he's going to have to live with this. I mean, it's going to come back to haunt him for a good while.
There's a political lesson here. I mean, if you're going to get starting with, if you're going to get in a public fight, don't make your opponent sympathetic.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, there are probably lots of people who don't support Planned Parenthood who have to basically be in a position now of defending the Girl Scouts and almost Planned Parenthood as well, in trying to separate them and trying to show that they are not affiliated. What I think is interesting in this debate is what's happening in our country with the polarization, which is if any person is a member of any organization and then participates in any way with another organization, somehow people put them together as an affiliation, or that's an endorsement, and somehow if you believe, if you support Planned Parenthood and you support another organization, then somehow Planned Parenthood's agenda becomes the other group's. It's a bizarre situation.
This was a resolution that had nothing binding. I mean, it brings me back to when Representative Dean Mock drafted a resolution to censure Bobby Knight for throwing the chair, and that made national news. I mean, on one level, it's the biggest non-event ever, but on the other level, it exposes some things that become controversial.
Well, the resolution itself was not controversial. This is a routine resolution that happens every day in the legislature, and it honors everybody from Evansville to Angola for one thing or another, and it's just part of the process. So by sending this letter out to some of his constituents, and by saying the things he did in the way he said them, and making the associations that he made this a news story, and unfortunately for him, it made it a national story, and he's become a laughingstock across the state and across the country because of these views and how outrageous that they are.
He's a laughingstock, but he's in a Republican district. He doesn't have a primary opponent. Will this hurt him politically?
Well, he has an opponent in November. We'll see. And it's obviously a good Republican district from their perspective, but anything can happen. And what's ironic about this, I agree with Mike. I think Brian Bosma handled it really in the only way he could handle it, because it is so outrageous that you have to laugh it off. But I would also like to see the chairman of the Republican Party and the governor stand up and say, we don't subscribe to this kind of nonsense, and they've been definitely quiet.
I don't think. Every time
somebody came up with an opinion in either party.
Getting up in a similar situation.
Oh, I can't.
And doing that.
Well, I can't.
Because
absolutely.
It only lends the whole thing credibility.
All right, tell me this, Mike. How long is this a one-week story?
Yes. I mean, surely it is. I mean, come on. I mean, this is so far out there that I don't think anybody's going to drag this thing out. If they do, they're doing it for their own political gain.
Well, that's right. And they
and
will.
It may work.
And it may work, because it is symptomatic.
You're hopeful. It is symptomatic.
Your line of the Tea Party
controls the Republicans is absolutely wrong.
Oh, yeah?
It's outrageous. We have 60 members in the House, 33 members in the Senate. Yeah. Most of Indiana agrees with the Republican Party, not the Democrat Party, or you'd be in the majority.
Yeah,
John,
and all of your moderates are retiring.
John,
this is indicative of one thing, and the one thing that I think is really the problem with the process is gerrymandering, because the districts are so clear in favor of one party or another that he doesn't have to worry about reelection. He can say these kinds of things with impunity.
We'll find out.
They won under old districts.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, do you believe the Girl Scouts are a radicalized organization? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, can I be neutral and still eat the cookies? Last week's question was, do you care that Dick Lugar lives in Virginia? 35% said yes, he should live in Indiana. 5% said no, two homes are not required. 60% said, I care more about how he votes. We had record participation this week. To take part in the poll, just go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. There's another controversy at the State House this week involving a group that works with young people. It has led to an effort to eliminate dozens of specialty license plates. A specialty plate for the Indiana Youth Group sparked the controversy. Mary Byrne is the executive director of the 25-year-old nonprofit that works to help Indiana gay, bisexual, and transgender youths.
I think that once certain groups caught wind that we had the plate, that's when the amendments started being submitted in the legislature onto different bills.
Mike McDaniel, is this effort misguided?
The sponsoring legislator said that's not what drove this decision, and I got to take him at his word for that.
But we do know that Eric Miller and Advance America are using their website to raise opposition to this particular license
plate. That's fine. Eric Miller has no official standing with anybody anywhere that I know of. I mean, this is a deal where, they should let the Department of Bureau of Motor Vehicles run this operation, and they should be the ones that determine who gets these plates, who doesn't. Once the legislators start micromanaging this kind of thing, it's a problem. Believe me, it's a problem. We do have too many of these. I mean, they're like, 180 or 200 different ones that we have now. I even had state policemen say we've got too many of them. They have a hard time keeping track of what's on the back of cars now. But this should be a BMV decision and not the Indiana General Assembly.
If the amendment that's now moving in the General Assembly passes, they'll also get rid of an NRA plate.
And they'll get rid of the zoo plate, and they'll get rid of the veterans that help out at the funerals. And they'll get rid of all kinds of plates. And, you know, they can use whatever excuse they have about the number of plates. This is designed to attack this one group. And it is further instance that the Tea Party does, in fact, control the Republican
nice
Party.
Try.
Because this is a war against an organization whose only function, as far as I can tell, is to try to help the kids that are in this situation adjust. That's all. And we're going to go to war on this question. We can't build roads. We can't talk about mass transit.
That don't meet
but
the
we can go to war. We can go to war because they might be gay. Just like because they might, you know, be feminist. Oh, my gosh, what a horrible thing.
Is this a distraction?
Well, I think it is a distraction. It's something that has come up and has consumed a lot of oxygen. And I think Mike's exactly right. This is an administrative function. Once the process is put in place, then let it work. The legislature is looking to administer the BMV in this regard, and they shouldn't.
It's hysterical, too, because the legislature used to approve these plates, and it got to be such a pain that finally they turned it over to the BMV. Then the BMV changed the way they print license plates and said, okay, well, it's easier than it used to be, so let's make the process easier so more folks have an opportunity, because what these plates do is generate revenue
for
the groups. And so now all of a sudden...
And a lot of them aren't generating the numbers that...
They aren't. A lot of them... It is actually very hard to raise a lot of money with one of these plates.
Exactly.
But so now we're right back to where the legislature wants to take it over again. And I remember those days, and it would be hilarious.
Moving on. Republican voters are expressing growing dissatisfaction with the GOP presidential field. And some of those voters want Mitch Daniels to reconsider his decision to stay out of the race. Daniels was at a Republican luncheon this week where he acknowledged that the encouragement from around the country for him to run for the White House is coming more frequently in recent weeks. Some are even speculating that the GOP nomination fight could lead to a floor battle at the Republican National Convention in Tampa later this year, giving Daniels or possibly New Jersey Governor Chris Christie an opportunity to run without taking part in the primary process.
If this became a brokered convention in Tampa, would you be interested in stepping into the breach?
I really would not be interested. I'd be interested in finding, if we get to that point, I would be interested in finding someone who can present a really credible and winning alternative.
John Katzenberger, does that end the speculation?
Well, it won't end the speculation, but I do think it ends his candidacy, and he's actually done that before a couple of different occasions. I think there are a lot of Republicans who would love to see Mitch Daniels in that position, would love to push his candidacy on a floor fight, but I think he's very clear. People will continue to hope for it, they'll continue to speculate about it, but I think the governor's been very clear that he's not interested.
Why does his name keep coming up?
I think people see him as the person that he described, as the guy who can make the very articulate argument for conservatives. But I think that people have forgotten that when he was maybe going to get in the race last time, he was facing a lot of the same issues or criticisms that some of the other candidates face. And so the truth is that no matter what candidate gets in the race or gets chosen, it's not going to be an easy ride.
If from a political standpoint, when the governor's asked that question now, he can't say, yeah, if they came to me, I might consider it, because he's undercutting the guys who are already out there, right?
Sure, that's true.
So do you think there's any chance that if it actually comes to a brokered convention that he might change that position?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely, and I tell you why. Because I think if it was undecided by the time it gets to Tampa, I still think that's a long shot, but it could happen because the rules have changed where people can win parts of states now instead of whole states, which will dilute it even more as we go forward. But if we got there and there was a drive on and he became somebody people were interested in from all across the country, it'd be hard to say no at that point. I think he could be persuaded to change his mind. But, again, I think it's a long shot that that's going to happen by the time you get to the floor. I'd sure nominate him in a heartbeat from the floor, but this thing is stacked against...
And you're going to be a delegate.
If this thing is stacked against, as you well know, these things are so well scripted. Yeah. The last thing somebody from the podium is going to do is recognize some guy from Indiana and says, I got a nomination to make over here.
Right. Gotcha.
It sure would be fun, though.
It would be.
You got to be amused at how his name keeps resurfacing, don't you?
Well, it's amusing because nobody likes the alternatives the Republicans are putting forward. You know, we talk about whether we're debating on whether contraception should be available and everything else that they've got out there. They're a very disappointing group, and even Republicans see that. But I take the governor's word, particularly after the gridiron, when he used the T word in the course of his monologue, I assumed that he was not going to be a candidate himself.
Okay, we're going to get to the gridiron later. Senator Richard Lugar stands by his decision to live in Virginia and use an old address in Indianapolis for voting purposes. Lugar made his first appearance in Indianapolis this week since his GOP primary opponent, Richard Murdoch, challenged him to buy a house in Indiana in order to take residency questions off the table. Lugar's voting address is 3200 Highwoods Court, a home he sold in 1977. I asked Lugar if he plans to buy another Indiana home.
Had a record. I do not plan to buy a house during the campaign. I believe that we have solid legal grounds, and I think this has been established by two attorneys general.
And actually, since then, a third attorney general has done that. Leslie Weidenbender, this question went before the State Election Commission today. They rejected the challenge to Richard Lugar's residency. Will that put an end to this?
No.
No.
It will put an end to the legal questions about whether he should be on the ballot. It doesn't put an end to the criticism that he doesn't live in a house in Indiana. I think it's part of just a larger case that opponents of Richard Lugar are building against him, and this is one piece of that.
All right. The Election Commission also rejected a challenge to Rick Santorum's name being on the primary ballot, and they voted in favor of a challenge to Republican gubernatorial candidate Jim Wallace. He's off the ballot.
Yeah.
Does that surprise you?
It does surprise me because I thought the reasoning that they used in the case of the Santorum situation, that inclusion would be the rule of the day, would apply also to Wallace. But apparently I believe it was Tony Long voted with the majority to strike Mr. Wallace from the ballot, and I am very surprised by that.
Yeah, and you've said publicly that Democrats would do whatever they could.
I thought Wallace would be on the ballot too, and Santorum as well, and I fully expected. I never thought that the challenge to Senator Lugar's residency had any legal merit. It doesn't even really matter technically who pays for his hotel room when he checks in Indiana. The question is whether he checked out of Indiana several decades ago, and that's a political question.
Okay, but why didn't Democrats vote to keep Jim Wallace on the ballot?
I don't know the answer to that question, except that I note that Mr. Wallace represented himself. And
he did represent himself,
you know,
did not
that
have
old
an
adage.
Attorney.
He did Those not, who represent themselves have a fool for a lawyer?
I don't know that I'd go that far, but I was at the meeting. He did not represent himself well, I would say. And he says now that he'll consider his options. That would include going to court, possibly running as a libertarian, or getting out. What do you expect he will do?
I figure he'll probably get out. He's not raised a lot of money. In fact, I don't think he's raised any. The money he had, he gave himself $1 million to his own campaign. The difference is the Santorum people were proactive in staying on the ballot, where he was reactive and didn't do anything to help himself. And that was the difference. Plus, I think there was a huge difference in the amount of signatures involved. And when I say difference between...
He was only 14 short.
Well, I thought it was 100 and
something. No, it was initially it was 111. By the last certification, it was 14 short.
Well, but I'm told that some of the material that they had looked like it had been altered. Right. So
which may explain why he was reactive. If you did a thorough search,
that's probably right.
You might have come up with
that. That's probably right.
I think one of the things that happened here was that the Marion County Election Board, of which there are some questions about how they do this process, but they had clearly given Jim Wallace several opportunities to bring back evidence, and they had recertified, and they had looked at the documentation he'd brought. So he had sort of had his second chance within the election board itself.
So Mike Pence, it appears, will be the only Republican on the ballot in May. How much does this help him?
I don't think it would have made a whole lot of difference. I think they could have used the primary campaign to kind of hone their campaign for the fall, actually. And I think it would have forced them to put some material out there earlier rather than later. And I don't know that that helps them that much. I think it would have actually helped him to have some information out there that they'll probably hold back on now.
Does it help John Gregg? Is he able to confront Mike Pence now in a way where he couldn't?
I really don't. Unless Jim Wallace was going to self-finance a campaign, and I mean by millions of dollars into a primary, I don't think it would have made any difference.
Charlie White has been sentenced for crimes that include voter fraud. The former Secretary of State failed to have his convictions reduced from felonies to misdemeanors this week, and he was sentenced to home detention for a year, a sentence that was stayed pending appeal. He was also fined $1,000 and ordered to do community service. It means he cannot return to the Secretary of State's office or practice law. And Delaney, is that a fair sentence?
I think that's a fair sentence. I think the judge, you know, balanced all the considering factors in this and came up with a sentence that fits. You know, I know he says he's going to appeal. It's hard for me to see what the basis of the appeal is going to be. It seems to me in that situation,
I think he's going to criticize his defense.
Well, there was no defense. And you know, in this situation, when it's all about what your intent is, it seems to me you've got to go in front of the jury and say, I messed up, I've embarrassed my family, I've embarrassed the office, I'm sorry, and hope that they come in at least with a misdemeanor, and he didn't do that. So the facts are what the facts are, and I think Judge Nation really did a pretty good job in holding him to, you know, the fact that he had shown no remorse without being too hard on the sentence.
No remorse. Maybe he showed a little contrition at the sentencing, but he's not handled this well from the beginning.
No, this is it's too bad. This is a tragedy because here's a young guy with a lot of ability who worked very, very hard to get to the office and had a lot of really had quite a future ahead of him, I think. But this is self-inflicted, and the way he handled this from day one was not good. And it came back to haunt him, and he's going to have to pay that price the rest of his life.
All right, so we're going to have arguments in the state Supreme Court next week about who gets to pick the replacement or who the replacement gets to be. Democrats think it should be Bob Osley, who was on the ballot in 2010. Republicans think the governor should have a choice. Any idea how that turns out?
I don't have any idea how that turns out. I think it's the most interesting part of the whole case. I mean, I think we've all known for a while that Charlie White was in big trouble. So really, it's all come down to this question of who gets to pick the next person.
And there's a lot at stake.
Yeah. Well, it gives the Republicans a chance to keep the lock that they have over all the statewide offices. But this also opens the door ever so slightly to the fact that the Democrats then would be able to get a statewide spot. And it could make a big difference for, you know, the statewide party overall. So that's why there is a very intense legal fight going on. And I'm like, Leslie, I'm looking forward to seeing how it turns out.
Yeah.
And we should expect a quick opinion from the Supreme Court.
I would assume. I mean, the facts are what the facts are. And, you know, if he was ineligible for the ballot because of voter fraud from the beginning, the law is pretty clear.
Finally, the Indiana Gridiron Dinner is back. The event, designed as a roast of the rich and powerful, was once an annual fixture on the Indiana political scene. It has been absent for 9 years. This year's dinner, sponsored by the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute, featured a roast of the four candidates for governor, well, now three, as well as remarks by current Governor Mitch Daniels. One of the highlights was an introduction of Daniels, this introduction by Lieutenant Governor Becky Skillman.
Let me tell you, it is so hard to be in Mitch Daniels' shadow. No, really, it's hard. The sun has to be just right, and you have to crouch down behind.
Nice little sample of almost 2 hours of enjoyment the other evening. Congratulations, John.
Thank you, Jim.
Is the gridiron here to stay?
I think it is, Jim, and it's with a lot of work from people at, you know, on this set and a lot of people also all over the place, and we were very fortunate. Very grateful and had an awful lot of fun. So I think it's back on the landmark, on the stage.
There's a lot of talk about how the culture in politics has changed and people don't get together and have fun.
This was so much fun. This was so much fun, and it was really great to see people enjoy teasing each other, doing roasts. I think everyone took everything in the spirit with which it was intended, and it seemed like to me everyone in the audience had just a great time.
Who thought Becky Skillman was funny?
I thought she did a great job. I think she and the governor and the people that did the singing,
the
show.
The singing was great.
And it was really good, the whole thing was.
I agree. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.